Hey kids, you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and this show is Fish Out of Agua with Michelle Carlo. Today is Tuesday, August 22nd, 2017, and we're going to start things off with another summer song from our well-spent youth. Back with Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. That was Cruel Summer from British girl group Bananarama's eponymous 1983 album, which was released in the United States in 1984. It's another song. It's another, yet another 1980s song whose music video was shot in New York City, and it features, if you want to go look it up and Google that shit, it features the Dukes of Hazzard type sheriff, I know. And a New York City cop. I know. Chasing the girls. I know. As they hurl bananas at the popo car. I know. But anyway, they all end up dancing together at some rave at the end. A scenario highly unlikely in our 2017 cruel summer, where it seems every other day the despotic wannabe orange popinjay with aspirations to Hitlerhood once again proves to be the greatest threat to the United States among, besides war, civil strife, depression, bubonic plague, and looking at the eclipse without glasses. What are you thinking? Okay, look, kids, I get that ruling powers all have their expiration dates. I mean, the Soviet Union barely lasted 74 years. The Soviet Revolution was 1917, and it was over by 1991 or two, right? Okay, like, I didn't Google it, I'm approximating. The British Empire, from which the United States sprang, lasted a debatable 300 years. The Roman Empire made it at least 1500, and the Mayans, well, they ruled about 3,000 years. But they, too, still disappeared. And what am I trying to say with all this? Nothing, kids. Nothing at all. I mean, I'm just a kid that grew up in a top-floor tenement walk-up in the Bronx. What do I know? Well, I do know this, because as I'm recording this a few days before air date, even with all the tension, pressure, stress, and anxiety swirling around us, I do know that life is still pretty much, thankfully, going on as usual. Because, after all, it's still summer in New York City, where the sunflowers nod as you pass them by. Local tomatoes taste so good, they bring tears to your mouth. The ocean is finally warm enough for even a wuss like me to dabble in. There was an eclipse yesterday. Well, it wasn't total in New York City, but still, when I went outside with the people from the day job, and like everybody was outside. Like, it's like every day job let everybody outside, so for at least for a half an hour, so we could be together and look at this thing. And I have to admit, it was kind of cool. Ah, and there's this. We have a fantastic guest artist coming up, who, in a very meta-effing-physical, freaky-effing-deaky way, picked this song for her intro. A song I'll tell you all about in a little bit. Before I am black, before I am woman, before I am short, before I am young, before I am African, I am human. I am human. Because I am black, because I am woman, because I am short, because I am young, because I am African, I am human, I am human, I am human, I am human. Before I am black, before I am woman, ooh, before I am short, before I am young. Because I am human. That was Dionne Farris's Human from her debut album Wild Seed, Wild Heart in 1994. And if that song doesn't say exactly what needs to be heard in this particularly cruel summer, then I just don't know what will. But anyway, now it's time for my favorite part of the show.
Welcome to Fish Out of Agra's Guest Artist of the Week! Woohoo! Yay! She is a musician and she's a singer and she is a host and she's a cabaret performer, personality, and she's a mom. And she's great. And her name is Alex DeSouz.
Yay!
Welcome to Fish Out of Agra.
Yay, thank you for having me.
Ching, ching.
And cheers.
Thanks. Yes. Scamming the conference room in Fashion Land. That's nice. Once again.
Yes.
So, Alex, please remind me. I ask this question of everybody that is on the show. But most of the time when I ask this, I have an inkling. I have no effing clue how we met.
We met at Eric Vedder's show, No Name and a Bag of Chips.
Okay.
When you performed... When the show, remember when it was in that fifth floor building?
Oh my God.
When it was a theater. This building has since been condemned and removed.
Yes,
from
it's I know where it is. It was on 8th Avenue, like by 45th, 46th
yeah, like
Street.
46
and it was like rat and roach infested and full
God.
Of lead paint, and there were whoos in the parking lot
and
junkies shooting up. And,
oh my God, and drunks would come to the show.
And this is in the year 2000, people. Yeah, we're not talking about the 70s.
No, this was.
We're not talking about the taxi driver days.
This is really not that long
no,
ago.
No, this is the turn of the century.
And this, and when he had the show, that our friend Eric Vedder has a fabulous comedy variety show called No Name and a Bag of Chips. And he used to do this show at midnight on
That's
the fifth floor
right.
of this building. It was a theater company. And the stage was whatever set of the show that was performing at the time.
Oh my God, it all comes back to me.
Oh yeah.
And
the
audience was a crapshoot because it could be full.
Yeah.
Or they could be like... crickets and two people and the roach in the corner.
Exactly. And it could be, you know, three drunks that were dragged in.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
who were just like, woo, you know, no. between bars.
I totally remember doing Carmen Mafungo there and seeing a homeless person in the audience.
Yeah.
And that's just like, and they were thrilled.
I think that was the first place I met you. And then Eric also
so
did a show at Collective Unconscious.
Yes, and that's also in the aughts.
Yes.
I love saying for those who don't know, the aughts are what you call the first years of the decade after the turn of the century, with the zeros. So from 2000 to 2009 are considered the aughts, and after that it's the teens, 20s, 30s, 40s,
right.
et cetera.
And, you know, and we're not talking 1800s or 1900s. We are talking the 2000s.
Yes, the 2000s.
So,
the 21st century, as it were.
Exactly.
I remember Collective Unconscious. Oh, my God, so many beautiful memories here. Oh, my God, I can't. That place on 8th Avenue. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Like some things, you know that saying that you can't unsee that?
Yes.
I cannot unremember this.
Yeah, no.
So, but Eric Vedder is just like, he's like a fountain of making connections for people.
Yes.
He is like the most accomplished, unfamous person that in comedy.
Thank
because
you.
Because he's been doing his show, No Name in a Bag of Chips, in different incarnations for at least 23 years.
Yes.
Since the 20th century.
Yeah.
And so many people have done his either book show or his open mic, and they have gone on to phenomenal success.
Yes.
Phenomenal. Shall we name a few?
Let's say Ophira Eisenberg.
Yes, Ophira Eisenberg.
Christian
and, Finnegan.
Harry Kondabolu.
Mm-hmm.
Tom
Shalhoub.
Tom Shalhoub.
Yes, definitely Harry Kondabolu.
Yes, and who I loved. He was a writer for Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell. And even W. Kamau Bell came and did a couple of shows while he was still when he was living here in New York doing Totally Biased.
Leanne Lord.
Carmen Lynch,
that's right.
You know, and right now Liz Mealy.
Yep.
Who is just rising up and up.
So
and up.
Anyway, I know we're talking about this man here, but he deserves to be shouted out. And if you see anything for his shows, check it out. It'll be good. And you don't know who you're going to see, who's going to be like the next comedy superstar. But talking about superstars, Alex, you have such an interesting mix of what you do as a performer because you are operatically trained, correct?
Yeah, I am classically trained.
You're classically trained as a singer. You drum with different bands.
I play drums primarily in the band The Summer Replacements, which is the house band for No Name and a Bag of Chips. But I also play drums. I play drums at a Kidville. I've played in other bands. So it's a lot of fun.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get to New York? I don't think you're a New York native.
I am not a New York native. I grew up in the Boston area. I grew up in Concord, Massachusetts. And, you know, I got that performing bug early because my parents loved classical music and musical theater. And so, you know, I was listening to show tunes. Of course, the early stuff, you know, Camelot and Mary Poppins and Annie and all of that when I was a kid. And I, of course, wanted to do that. And so, of course, you know, I was auditioning and doing shows here and there in the Boston area. And then I was like, I must come to New York, you know. But I wanted a few more things under my belt in Boston. But in Boston and here in New York, when you are tall, big boned and ethnically ambiguous, that sometimes gets a little harder to do.
Let's talk about that ethnic ambiguity, especially growing up in Concord, Massachusetts.
Yeah, well, yes, particularly as I did not know my full background. At the time, my father was older, and a lot of people could say that, you know, people didn't talk about their backgrounds as much. They're like, we're in America now, or whatever. My father's parents were from Grenada. And
the West Indies.
Yes, they're from the West Indies.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Another Caribbean.
Yes.
Woo, Wepa, yay. Wepa. I know, Wepa is for Latins, but I've had Puerto Rican, Dominican, Jamaican, Haitian, and Trini on the show. You were my first grenade.
And I love that. It's like, you know, I
like that. First grenade. Blow it up.
That's what I'm here for.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad never talked about his background. Part of it was that you just didn't back then. He was, as I mentioned, he was older. He was born in 1915. And secondly, I do believe, he was 56 when I was born.
Oh my, potent.
Yeah, you know.
Caribbean, got, you a know, Caribbean blood.
Hello. So, but also, he was passing. Because he was born, I found out, in Harlem. And then his family moved to Taunton, Massachusetts, which is a huge port town back in the day. And then he went to college up in northern Maine. Now, I'm not sure exactly how this decision got made. I don't know if it was a family decision, if he made it by himself or what, but he would say basically that he was French and Scottish, which, you know, people from the Caribbean, everybody passed through. So that's true somewhere.
He very well may have had French and Scottish DNA in him.
Exactly.
And passing is something that people don't talk about a lot.
Yeah.
Because when somebody decides to pass, that means that they're deciding to live as a white person and not the person of color that they are. That means that their outward appearance presents itself so they can get away with passing for white. Yeah. But the downside of passing is that you are also forced to sublimate and deny your heritage in order to do this. So you're leading a false life.
Yeah, I
am the type of Latina who can also pass. And to me, that's one of the ugliest words in the language.
Yeah.
I once had a family member say to me at a family dinner table when I mentioned a racial incident in my high school, and he said that this person told me that I was an idiot for telling people I was Puerto Rican and that if he looked like me, he would pass for his entire life. And I told this vile person that if I looked like him, I would kill myself.
With my dad, was that...
Born in 1915.
Yeah, he was born in 1915.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wanted to start... He went to college... You know, as I said, he was born in 1915. He was growing up in the 20s and 30s. He went to college in northern Maine in the mid-30s. And this is Depression era. And... Once again, I don't know when this decision was made. I don't know how, if it was a family thing. And I do think, like, his family knew, because his sister, who I finally met in 2008, was darker. But there's a whole long story about how she lived on the West Coast eventually, because his mom and sister had to move for his mom's health reasons while he stayed in Maine. But... All I can think of is, like, he's growing, you know, going to college in northern Maine in the 30s. He's trying to get work in broadcast journalism in the 30s and 40s. And he hits the peak of his career really in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, it's like, he was a morning man in radio.
Wow.
And he worked at the same station for 44 years.
Oh, my God. I better do good with this episode.
Yeah.
No mistakes.
You know.
Pressure.
So, but... I often say, I'm like, when was a good time to say, oh, by the way, I'm black, you know? And I think in a way he also like sort of created a character for himself. And he lived that life, but my mom knew, and she kept that secret for him. But I know she loved him to death. There was no, like, to this day, she always says he was his soulmate, her soulmate. And she has never remarried. She was 20 years younger than my dad. And she's 82 now. She's never had any other interest in any other man.
Right, because once you go black, you don't go
back.
Whoa! You know, I had to go there.
So it's just like, you know.
Sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
No, exactly.
Not to you for listeners.
It was definitely a harder time. I would like to believe, were he alive now, things would be much different.
And when they got married, that was before Loving.
Yes, they got married in 66.
Oh, the year before.
Yeah, the year before Loving. They got married in 66. And luckily, they got married up north.
Right. Well, those laws did not exist.
Yeah. And just to an example of how difficult this was, my father's first wife, my mother was the third last and favorite. My father's first wife did not know about his background and apparently found his birth certificate. And... after they got divorced, when my father married his second wife, she sent a copy of my dad's birth certificate to his second wife. And that was already a tenuous
coupling. And for what purpose?
Basically to, tell on him.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And she did the same to my mother. But luckily, my mother already knew and didn't care. But,
why do we do this to each other? But we talk about these things in the hope... That, you know, MTV has those commercials saying, let this be the generation that ends smoking.
Yeah.
I want this to be the generation that ends passing.
Yes.
That nobody has to pass, whether for color, whether for gender, whether for any type of identity.
Exactly. Don't,
so that people accept you for who you are unconditionally.
Yes.
Without reservation.
Exactly. You're just like, why? You don't want this to be a thing anymore.
No.
And you know, there are different types of passing now, where during the job crisis, during the recession, people looking for jobs. And there were black men and women who, if they have African or other type of ethnic sounding names, they would get passed over. Their resumes would be passed over. But so some of them changed their names to more white sounding names. So they would pass in that sense just to get a foot in the door.
Are you talking about first names?
Yeah, first names and sometimes even last names.
Ideal.
And, you know, because they wanted a foot in the door and they felt they were not getting calls for interviews because they would test it out. And they're like, if they put a white name, a white sounding name on their resumes, they would get phone calls.
This is why my parents named my brother and me Michelle and Kevin. Because they were born in the 30s, yeah. And there was no bilingual education back then. And there was no, they wanted us to be American.
Well,
and even, that was the way you thought back then.
Yes, well, even with my mom's Danish family, my mom was the surprise. She's the fourth and last child, and she was the surprise. And my her siblings were Mabel, and let's see, there's Mabel, and Eleanor, and Stanley. And then my mom got the Danish name, Greta. Now, Greta doesn't sound that bad, but when it's spelled in the Danish way, it is spelled G-R-E-T-H-E. Mm. And so people to this day call up the house looking for Greth or Greta D'Souza, and they don't understand. It's like, no, that's a Danish name, and it's pronounced Greta. And they don't just even ask first. You know, they just say it like that, you know? And
so it goes both ways.
Yeah, it totally goes both ways. And like, and you know, and these were white people, but that was the whole thing, was
foreigner.
It was foreigner.
Yes,
it was the whole foreignness. So this, and my mom was born in 1935.
So our parents' appears.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like crazy. Yeah. Well, let's get back to performing. Oh my God, well, we just like went on this tangent.
You kind of can't not. You know, it's like these are conversations that are happening right now and need to happen more often.
Yeah.
But
so you moved to New York after you graduated college?
I moved to New York actually well after I graduated college. About, let's see, I graduated in 93.
Did you go to Emerson?
I did.
Yes, I knew it.
Yes.
Emerson. You know how many people have gone to Emerson that are just like in our community?
Yes.
Cindy Freeman, Scott Stifler.
I knew Cindy back in Boston.
DJ Hazard.
Yes, I remember DJ from Boston.
Yeah.
Because I used to see his comedy show. I saw him do comedy in Boston. I saw Cindy in Boston. Used to see her at auditions all the time. And I mean, Emerson.
It's a good school.
It's been a great school. And there's so many people that luckily have continued their actual path.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And every person that we mentioned is working in some kind of creative thing today.
Yeah.
You know, Cindy's teaching at the Story Studio. Scott is managing editor of The Villager and Chelsea Now. DJ Hazard, last I heard, was doing little films. I haven't seen him in a while. But DJ Hazard, we remember you.
Yes, DJ! And so I worked with some other theater companies in Boston. And thank you, Underground Railway Theater, for letting me get my equity card working for them. And so after I got my card, I decided I'm going to go. And I came here in 99.
Ooh.
And I came here.
You were here for the Y2K.
Yes, I was.
Did you party like it was 1999?
You know I did.
I know you did.
So
I've seen it.
My career has not skyrocketed. You know, but I've had a really good time and I've met fascinating people and I'm still doing stuff.
And
so.
You've done a lot of stuff. You've done, I think you've done theater in places too numerous and sometimes too torturous to mention.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah, I have done, you know, one act, I've directed, I have written, I have done story shows. Up until recently, I hosted a cabaret night where you could have 6 people, you could have 40 people, you know, coming, and I'm trying to get that going again.
I want to hear a little bit about that for a second. You said you're classically trained as a singer.
Yes, I am.
So what does that mean for people that don't know what that means?
That means that, for me, I could sing classical music. I have done opera, but it's having good vocal technique.
So it means you sound good when you sing a cappella.
Yes. I can sing a cappella on pitch. I have good breath control. I mean, I've had vocal issues. I think, you know, everybody at some point has them. You know, whenever I've had troubles, I just go back to my initial training and I can bring that back. So
that's great. I bet you all that training really was useful for theater. Yes. Because you would like be able to do like a long monologue and you wouldn't be like you wouldn't know how to breathe and just like use your breath to make the words resonate.
But you know, it's not that hard to get that training either. Yes. You know, there are voice teachers out there who are specifically doing stage work for speech. You know, so you learn how to project your voice and not have to scream or necessarily need a
like
microphone.
Like chest voice as opposed to throat voice.
Yes, and Helena Bonham Carter apparently worked with like the top vocal coach in London or something for this because she's not a singer. And, you know, they always talk about breathing from your diaphragm and also breathing from your nether regions. And apparently this coach did say to Helena Bonham Carter, breathe from your cunt!
Are you kidding me?
I am not lying. I read that in an article and I was like, my goodness.
We are not an FCC show, people. Man, that word is allowed on the air.
Like, my goodness. And that's a lot for me. I don't say those words.
The Brits just like have a thing with that word.
Yes, they do.
You know, we don't call each other that.
No.
We call each other lots of other things.
Yes.
Bruja, puñeta. Okay, that's Spanish. But we don't say that.
No. I'm not a fan.
Is that like a white person thing, that word?
I wonder if it is. I don't know. I didn't even hear it that much from when I was growing up. And I heard all sorts of things. Okay. You know, we all hear all sorts of things at school, but like, well, I never heard that one.
That's a subject for another show.
Yeah, exactly.
Where did the C word come from? where did you do stuff here?
I've done stuff with small theater companies here in the city. My largest credit would be at New York City Center. They do a wonderful series called the Encore Series, where they do concert stagings of musicals that weren't so well known. They've evolved and they've done some very well known things, but they do these amazing productions. And I had been auditioning, but in 2003 I actually got to be part of the ensemble of a production of the operetta The New Moon. It's a Syngman Rhomberg piece, and what was so great was at the time, there was a whole issue with a lot of Broadway shows were shrinking their orchestras and trying to get in like big synthesizers that would cover whole string sections and all this. And of course, the music union was fighting that. So City Center said, you know what? This is a Syngman Rhomberg operetta. We will have a 36-piece orchestra. And I think, they had a 32-piece orchestra, which was considered huge by Broadway standards. And we had a 36-person ensemble, and I was singing with Broadway caliber people, and people who sing at the Met, and we're singing with New York City Opera.
That must have been incredible.
It was phenomenal. It was just so wonderful to bring that music to life and to be part of that. And later that year, there used to be a fundraiser for the Encore Series called the Broadway Bash, and so I was part of the ensemble for that. And so there's Norm Lewis, who is presently in a production of Sweeney Todd right now downtown with Carolee Carmello. And, you know, I'm singing with him and with Sandy Duncan, everybody's favorite Peter Pan.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
Yes, Sandy Duncan.
And for those young people who might not know who she is, for people of the Gen X generation, she is Peter Pan.
Yes. I saw her.
I don't think they have a Peter Pan for now.
There was Kathy Rigby.
That's right.
And as far as I know, like, she is 50-something and still doing it.
Well, that's all right. Some of us still do it when they're 50.
Hello. But, like, she's still, like, swinging from Ryers and the whole, you know. And so she is still, as far as I know, she is still touring. And Sandy Duncan was my Peter Pan. And so it was so fun to like see her and work with her. And like at the time she was 58 and she could still do cartwheels and splits on stage.
And why not?
Exactly.
And why not? That's the other thing. It's like like that whole age thing. It's like you're supposed to like be a certain way when you're a certain age.
Exactly.
And it's like, no, be the way you are.
That's right. And I'm like, you want to do, you, if you can still do flips, if you have kept yourself up and are still dancing and still doing flips and splits and cartwheels and whatever, like she was doing, like, more like, power to you.
Like Rita Moreno still kicks her leg up.
Hello.
And that woman is older than my mom. She's like 86.
That's right. Cheetah Rivera, still dancing.
And she's like 88. Like,
she still can move and sing.
Yes, because she never stopped.
Exactly.
See, this is to the young who want to, this is the key. You have to be a shark. Never stop.
Exactly. Never stop moving.
Never stop moving.
Just keep swimming.
And keep talking. That's and like, talking about talking, I also remember you primarily as a storyteller. So tell me a little bit about how you got into that.
I started writing this thing because at the time, I did not know my background and was kept getting cast as Black and Hispanic. I officially was this white girl getting cast as Black and Hispanic roles and or just being sent in for these types of roles. And I was like, what do I do with this, you know? And so
ethnically ambiguous.
Ethnically ambiguous.
Yes, like
and,
moi.
So I called the show Single What Female Tales of the Tall, Big Boned, and Ethnically Ambiguous.
Single What Female?
Yes.
I love it. That's and, right. I love it.
And when I became a mom, I started a blog called Married What Mama. But that's how it started. And I would basically submit monologues and start testing out material from these experiences I was having. And that's how it started. But I've done other stories as well. And I love it. It's just a lot of fun. And I love hearing the stories from other people. Because that's always part of the fun when you get to do a storytelling event is hearing the other stories. And so one of these days, I might finally get to the moth.
Yes, know, I know. That. The moth is like the true north, the shining star for so many people. The moth is great. The moth is great. And I would just say, don't be afraid of it. Just go. Just go and do it. And speaking of doing it, I hear that you have a story that you'd want to share with us now.
I do. It's kind of a couple of stories in a story, but... Well, here we go. So, my husband and I got married. And eventually came that time we were like, thinking about children. Now, we've never been people that were like, we must have babies! You know, we were just like, hey, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. We'll be fine. But when we found out I was pregnant, we suddenly were like, oh, what's it gonna look like? Because I'm mixed, my husband's white, and we fell into that trap, you know, that most people talk about, you know, mixed couples. They're like, oh, you're going to have this beautiful, exotic-looking baby. Oh, my God. You know, and while we never went that far, we did suddenly go, like, what is it going to look like? You know? So we fell into that trap. And then finally, the day came. And my son was born. I am mixed. I am a brown person. My husband is white, but you can still see he's got a hint of Southern Italian. My son is pink. He basically got all the white. Like, he got the Irish on my husband's side. He got the Danish on my side. He looks like my Danish grandmother. He is a strawberry blonde, and he is amazing. He's hilarious, and he's tall. He's going to be Thor. It's amazing. So, of course, the time comes when I'm walking around and I suddenly realized I'm a brown person with a pink child. And so the comments began. And it really, I'm trying to think of when it really started. But I think one of the first times I'm on the Upper West Side, I'm at that Trader Joe's on 72nd. And I go in and I'm at the counter. I have my son strapped to me. And the woman at the counter says, oh, he's so beautiful. How long have you been with him? I'm like, oh, since they took him out of my belly. And she's like, oh, my goodness. Oh, those, you know, there are just so many things. There's all these fascinating things about race. It's amazing. I'm like, oh, you should see the eye, the face Michelle just made. And so next time, actually not really next time, but it was one of the next times, I'm in Acton, Massachusetts. I've gone up to see my family, and there's this wonderful children's museum in Acton that I cannot go and see my family without bringing my son to this place. He loves it, and it's wonderful. So we go there, and we're a little early. And so there's another mom there and her little boy. She is blonde. Her boy's blonde. But it doesn't matter. I'm like, I grew up around all of this. It's okay. So we're outside. We're waiting, playing. There's tricycles and all this. And I start chatting with the mom, and we're waiting for the place to open. And eventually we get to the whole, so what brings you to the museum today? And eventually she asks me, oh, so are you taking care of him for the day? Like, I should be taking care of him because he's mine. And after her moment of embarrassment, we get back to chatting about other things. And then finally, when the place opens, she turns back to me and says, you know, I was just wondering because you look so young. And at the moment, I wanted to say, good save, lady, because, you know, I had my son when I was 40. I was like 43 at the time. Now, I may look younger than I am, but I don't look that young, okay? So I let it go. I let it go. And then the most recent was at the church I sing at. I sing at a marvelous church in Midtown. I've been singing there for 9 years. And we had a member or guest who was with us for a few months. She was in the city working. And now normally, like for a while, my husband and son would come on almost every Sunday and we'd have lunch afterwards and then my husband goes to work. Well, we'd had a period of time when my son was playing t-ball, so he wasn't in very often. But one day, they had a Sunday, there was no game. So my husband and son come in at the end of the service and my son runs up to me and he goes, Mommy! And this woman says, oh my goodness, that can't be yours. And I was like, oh, yes, he is. And of course, eventually we get to the whole fact that, you know, I have to end up bringing up that he looks like my Danish grandmother and that I am a mixed race person. And sometimes this is what happens, you know, with mixed race children, you know, and so basically we need to remember, as you see more and more mixed families, and there are indeed more and more mixed families, when you're seeing Cheerios ads with mixed race families, you know, coming on, it's becoming part of the culture. Just remember, next time you see a brown mom with a white child, try to remember, she might not be the nanny.
Oh, snap. Oh, that was the end, right?
That's the end.
Okay, oh my God. I was just like, oh, snap. Oh my God. Yes, I was like, I almost like spit liquid out of my nose like several times during the story. You know what? And you know what got me too? Was like, you look so young. You know why you look young? Black don't crack, brown don't frown, beige don't age, and as my abuela used to say, Puerto Rico's no creaking.
That's great.
Or maybe the grenade don't age.
That's right, the grenade don't age.
Oh, right. Here we are. Urban Dictionary better keep up with us.
That's right. My dad did not admit his age until he was 80.
Wow.
Because he looked 10 years younger than he already was.
Well, we both do.
Yeah.
Holla. See us on the radio. So, Alex, where can we see your fabulousness next coming up?
Well, right now, I am hoping to be behind the kit again at No Name and a Bag of Chips at Otto Shrunken Head. It's always the middle Fridays of the month. You can see me drumming there. Sometimes I also sing there. You can also look me up on YouTube. I have a friend with whom I do mashups. His name is Richard Binder. He's an amazing singer and performer in his own right. And he sings at the church I sing at with me. And we found out we're both big music junkies and we have a penchant for mashups. So we've done a few of those on mashups. So you can look up Alexander D'Souza and Richard Binder or Binder Sues on YouTube. We've had some crazy scheduling, so we haven't done anything in a while, but we have a few lined up that we're trying to get.
Facebook, recording. Website, Twitter?
I am on Facebook. Alex D'Souza on Facebook. You can also find me on Twitter under NN Uptown Cabaret, because my cabaret show, No Name, presents the Uptown Cabaret. So I'm on Twitter and Instagram. under NN Uptown Cabaret. And also, you can find me, because I play drums at a comedy show, and I'm often behind these people, I take pictures, and on Instagram, you can look up hashtag behind the funny for those pictures.
So you got all the socials covered.
Oh yeah, I'm doing my best.
So Alex, let me ask you in closing, if you had any advice to any child who is sitting in their bedroom or the place that they share with their family, anywhere that wants to be an artist and doesn't know how, because everything in their life is conspiring to make them feel less than, what would you tell that person as if he was your own child?
Do it. Make the art. If it is in your blood and you feel you can't do anything else, you know, get out the, if you have like pen and paper left behind, you know, like, you know, if your mom or dad makes lists and there's just paper and that's the only paper that's around, and there's a pen somewhere, draw. If you like to sing, sing out the window, get on the, sing with it, you know, sing out the window, sing on the street, get that brush microphone in front of the mirror, do that. If you like making other kinds of music, if there's a way for you to get an instrument, if you don't have one already, preferably you can, you know, if you're able to do that at school, do that. Find a teacher, find a mentor. There's always somebody out there that will be there for you, preferably in your school, is someone in your community, who can, if they see the art in your heart, they will help you. If you can't find that person yet, you just got to keep doing it and put it out there the best you can.
So don't give up.
Don't give up. I like to believe I'm the queen of the late bloomers. It's taking me a long time.
No, honey, you're the princess. I'm the queen.
Okay.
Thank you, Alex. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on Fish Out of Agua.
Thank you for having me.
Woo! Kissy. Mwah. Mwah. Kissy on the air.
Are still here in the rear, yo, we don't need you. You ain't a killin' off good young nigga move. When we get hungry, we eat the same fucking food, the ramen noodle. This simple voodoo is so maniacal, reliable to pull a juju. The irony is that this bad bitch in my lap, she don't tell me she make money, she don't study that. She gon' give it to me, ain't gon' tell me nothing back. She gon' take the brain to where the place she sit on at. Vidor's signs with it, don't try to rhyme with it. VH1 has a show that you can waste your time with. Guilty pleasure, take the edge off reality. And for a salary, I'll probably do that just sporadically. The OG Gucci boots are smitten with iguanas. The IRS piranhas see a nigga getting common. Niggas in the hood living in a fishbowl. Gentrify here, now it's not a shithole. Trend set up, I know, my shit's cold. Hand set up because I ain't so bold. But hey, all you black folks, you must go. All of you Mexicans, you must go. And all of you poor folks, you must go. Muslims and gays, boy, we hate your ways. So all of you bad folks, you must go.
The fog and the smog of the media, the logs, false narratives of guys that came up against the odds. We're not just nigga rappers with the bars. It's kismet that we're cosmic with the stars. You bastards overlooking street art, better yet street smart, but you keep us off the chart. Some of the fucking numbers and your statisticians. Fuck y'all know about true competition. Just like the AO picture on there talking about he hitting. The only one who's hitting are the ones that's currently spitting. We got your Missy smitten, rubbing on a little kitten, dreaming of a world that's equal for women with no division. Boy, I tell you, that's vision. Like Tony Romo when he hit and went in. The tribe be the best in a division. Shaheed Muhammad cut it with precision. Who can come back years later, still hit the shot? Still, I'm trying to move you off the fucking block. Babylon blood clot. Two on your head, top.
All of you
jokes, you must go.
That song, with a little extra fire alarm siren thrown in from me, yes, that song was We the People from the recently reunited A Tribe Called Quest. Remember them? They had a 2016 album called We Got It From Here, Thank You For Your Service. We the People. I really like that song, and I like the name of that song, and I like everything about it, because El Pueblo Unido Nunca Serán Divididos. Or a people united will never be divided. And oh, there's the sound of the cat going in the litter box. Someday I'm going to have a real studio, people. But for now, we are doing this in our bedroom. Woohoo! And lest you think the litter box is inside the bedroom. No. Ew. Our Yeti microphone is just so sensitive. I can hear this across the apartment. Because, yes, I'm in a floor through. Because, yes, this is Brownstone, Brooklyn. And that leads me to give you this announcement for our little DIY show and the fantastic internet freeform community radio station that lets me play with you each week called Radio Free Brooklyn. Wouldn't it be amazing to see your community radio station represented at South by Southwest next spring? Yep, you can help. You can help Radio Free Brooklyn make it happen by doing one simple thing. Vote. V-O-T-E. Vote, vote, vote. Vote for Radio Free Brooklyn to be part of South by Southwest next March. And here's how to do it. Just head over to radiofreebrooklyn.com/SXSW. Register and cast. It doesn't cost anything to register. Register and cast your vote for our panel. The panel is going to be DIY radio and local music communities. And hopefully there won't be any cats scratching in the litter box on the other end of the apartment. Woohoo! Well, anyway, your votes will help choose the panels for South by Southwest in 2018. And the more votes Radio Free Brooklyn gets, the better chance we have to take the RFB show on the road. Find out more information and cast your vote by going to www.radiofreebrooklyn.com/SXSW. And make sure to tell your friends, too. Voting ends on August 25th, which I think is this coming Friday. So thanks so much for being part of our Radio Free Brooklyn community. And yes, you've been listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. And this show is Fish Out of Agua with Michelle Carlo. And we're almost done with our show. Oh, my God. We thank you for listening. We wish that you would support this show or any other show on Radio Free Brooklyn that you like. You can go to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com's homepage and click on the donate button. And you can support any show for as little as $1 per episode. So think about it. Help keep the DIY community on the air. I mean, you know, not knowing how to do things doesn't prevent people from doing them. Because we need art. That's what we need. We need more art in the world. It's the antidote for what ails us. Anyway, listen to Brooklyn Bandstand coming up next at 4 o'clock. And we're going to close by another song that Alex picked for this episode. And freaky deaky or not, it's called Declare Independent. And it's from her Volta album from 2007. Ah, the lovely swan dress wearing, and I'm not making fun of it because I love that dress, Bjork. Declare Independence, and we'll see you next week.
Don't let them do that to you. Declare independence. Don't let them do that to you. Declare independence. Don't let them do that to you. Declare independence. Don't let them do that to you.
Raise your flag!